I don't know that I've ever had a team be outscored 15-0 in fast break points. Their effort was much better than our effort, and then we still had it there, and we couldn't make any shots even around the basket. So it's frustrating, but it's what it's been quite a bit of this season.
That was North Carolina head coach Roy Williams after Saturday's loss to arch-rival Duke. The North Carolina Tar Heels, winners of six national championships, a school that produced names like Vince Carter, James Worthy, and Michael Jordan, have been downright bad this year. Today, as the ACC tournament kicks off in Greensboro, UNC enters as the lowest overall seed. How did they fall so far so fast, and who is to blame? I'm Jason Fitz, in for Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, March 10th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Jeff Borzello, I'm a little shook. North Carolina finished the regular season. They lose to Duke. That's fine. We're used to that. But they're the lowest seed in the ACC tournament, North Carolina. So sum up how you would view this season for the Tar Heels.
I mean, they're arguably the most disappointing team in the country.
Jeff Borzello is a college basketball insider for ESPN.
And I know we have to take some other factors into account with injuries and Cole Anthony and things like that. But, you know, this was a preseason top 10 team that, like you said, is going to be the bottom seed in the ACC tournament. And the ACC is not good this year. It's a pretty down league. You know, there are Miami and BC and Wake Forest, Pittsburgh. None of those teams are very good. And Carolina is at the bottom of all that. And to me, that's just shocking. You know, this is one of the best programs of all time, a blue blood, like I said, a top 10 preseason team. And 4 months later, 5 months later, they're the worst team in the ACC. And it's, you know, one of the bigger stories in college basketball this season. And I think you could really make the case that they're the biggest disappointment in college hoops.
So let's go back to October. Preseason rankings come out. North Carolina's in the top 10. They're sitting at number 9. Refresh everybody on what the real expectations were coming into this season for this team.
I mean, they lost a lot of guys from last year, but they did bring in what people expected was an impact recruiting class. It was led by Cole Anthony.
The centerpiece of Roy Williams' retooling effort, it's Cole Anthony, one of the top freshmen in the country, making his debut tonight in front of a raucous crowd here at the Dean Dome.
He was expected by pretty much everyone to be the most productive freshman in the country. That's how he was in high school. That's how he was on the AAU scene. He was a guy that was going to put up big points. He was going to put up big assist numbers. He was going to rebound, and he was going to win games. That's just what he was at the high school level, and people expected him to be that same player at Carolina. And it kind of set up perfectly for him because he was able to come in, and this was a team that didn't have any real go-to guys coming back. So they said, hey, Cole Anthony, you're going to get the ball from day one, and you're going to lead us. And, you know, it kind of looked good, you know, in the first game of the season. He was terrific. He had 34 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists.
What a debut for Cole Anthony. North Carolina may have lost a lot of stars to the NBA after last season, but they've got one superstar here in Chapel Hill.
The feeling was, you know, this team is going to be okay even despite the losses. And along with him, they brought in two grad transfers that, you know, were probably two of the 5 or 7 best grad transfers in the country. It was Christian Keeling from Charleston Southern and Justin Pierce from William & Mary. And that added some experience. It added some veteran leadership. And combined with a couple other guys, Armando Bacot was a 5-star recruit. Garrison Brooks was a 2-year starter down low. And so I just think that people thought, you combine the newcomers with the guys returning, and even though there weren't any stars coming back from last year's team, there was enough here to compete for an ACC title. And Roy Williams has done this before, where his team is written off a little bit in the preseason and underranked behind teams like Duke, and he finds a way to win. And that's just what he does. And I think people just expected him to do it again with the guys he had coming in and coming back.
Well, so now you've got a team that has preseason expectations. They get into the season. What was the first time this season that there was a first real sign of concern that the season might not go the way some had hoped?
I think there was a couple of things. I think one was, even when they were winning the games, they won their first 5 games of the season. But even in some of those, the Notre Dame win, the Alabama win, there were some signs of, you know, is this team going to be as good as we thought?
Roy Williams, you get the sense he hasn't loved all aspects of his team's play here today.
No, he has not. He has not.
They barely beat Notre Dame. I mean, the 11-point margin wasn't indicative of how close the season opener was against Notre Dame. So I think there was, okay, let's give it time. Let's let Cole Anthony and the other freshmen get acclimated, and this team will figure it out. but they lose by 25 at home to Ohio State to start December. You know, then they lose at Virginia. You know, losing at Virginia is not usually a big concern, but this is not a vintage Virginia team, and I think most people realize that at that time. And then they lose to Wofford. They ended up finishing below 500 in the Southern Conference.
The Wofford Terriers come to Chapel Hill and knock off a top 25 North Carolina squad.
And that's when the eyebrows start raising as to, you know, what's going on with this team? Are they poised to be this massive disappointment? And obviously, once Cole Anthony gets hurt, the wheels kind of fall off from there.
Second, the breaking news, Cole Anthony out 4 to 6 weeks after undergoing arthroscopic knee surgery to repair a partially torn meniscus.
Well, at that point, you know, maybe things are a little bit concerning, but they're going to get to ACC conference play. You said it, the ACC, not the best conference in the world. So they get to the ACC schedule. How's that go for them?
You look at their schedule and you said, okay, they can weather the storm. You know, they had three straight home games in ACC play against Georgia Tech, Pitt, Clemson, and then they had games against Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, and Miami. You know, even a bad UNC team or even a mediocre UNC team could go 6-0 in those games. It was kind of the bottom half of the league, and they went 1-5, losing the first five games of that stretch.
79-77 in double overtime, Virginia Tech knocking off North Carolina.
I think that was almost the beginning of the end.
When you look back at the schedule, what would be the one moment that sort of pushed everything over to the point of no return?
Honestly, I think it was after Cole Anthony comes back.
It's been a long ways away, 11 games without Cole Anthony, but he will play tonight.
Yeah, and a 500 UNC team. Suddenly, Jay has a lot of juice. Look, Cole Anthony.
So they beat Miami, they beat NC State, then Cole Anthony comes back for a home game at Boston College. And, you know, they weren't very good at the time, but they were 10-10, 3-6 in the ACC. And, you know, the narrative was kind of, okay, if Cole Anthony comes back, the committee will look at them and say, you know, with Cole Anthony, this is an NCAA tournament team. He's going to be on the roster in the NCAA tournament. They're going to factor that in. So I think people started wondering, can UNC string together some wins and make a late run? And in his first game back, they lose at home to Boston College.
Calling for the screen. It came late. Three on the timer. Heaves it up. No good. Boston College has spoiled Cole Anthony's return.
I think that was, you know, the sign that it's not going to happen.
So that's not obviously the only epic moment we all continue to think about from the season. Take us back to the first game between North Carolina and Duke.
The Duke game was a game that could have turned things around. It could have at least changed the narrative about Carolina. And to lose in that fashion, another late blown lead, losing to your biggest rival.
Duke comes back not once but twice to beat Carolina.
To me, that was a really low moment, but just because it could have been really a season-changing moment for Carolina, and the way it happened, it kind of sent them even further down into the season purgatory.
Coming up, how has Hall of Fame coach Roy Williams handled the worst season of his career, and how much is he to blame for the Tar Heels' struggles?
Hi guys, given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply.
History made! 0-59, no more! Tigers on the road, and they win it 79-76.
So coming into the season, I'm sitting at a bar with a bunch of ACC network people, and all of a sudden the Clemson North Carolina game's on, and everybody's trying to figure out why are people yelling at this game? And what we're watching is Clemson, who was 0-59 when playing at North Carolina. They get their first win in overtime at Chapel Hill. Standing around everybody, they are stunned. After the game, Roy Williams said, quote,
"I've had some great moments as a coach. And I'd say that right now this is my lowest one because losing this game was my fault. If I die tomorrow or 20 years from now, that'll be the biggest regret I have in 32 years as a coach, because these kids really need to win. And their coach let them down today.
Was that really the lowest moment of Roy Williams' career?
I mean, it's hard to argue that it wasn't. I mean, not only did they lose it at home for that one, I mean, they had a 10-point lead in the final couple of minutes, and Clemson was able to close the gap and force overtime and get the win. And if you look back at Roy Williams' head coaching career, you know, A, this is by far the worst season, but it's his first time finishing below 500. It's only the third time missing the NCAA tournament since he became a head coach in 1988. And one of those was his first season at Kansas 32 years ago. So he hasn't had a ton of bad moments during his head coaching career. And to be the first North Carolina team to lose at home to Clemson, the way they did it, losing that 10-point lead, you know, it is hard to argue that it is probably the lowest moment of his college coaching career.
Oh, but the highest moment ever for Clemson basketball. I'm just saying, Clemson fans. Oh, so, Jeff, give me a little perspective in your mind on how accomplished Roy Williams North Carolina basketball is, and as a result, how strange that makes this season.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know if Roy Williams sort of gets the national credit he probably deserves for how consistent and how successful he's been. I mean, people talk about, you know, Mike Krzyzewski's the greatest coach, and you know, that's well deserved also, but Roy Williams has been, you know, arguably better than him in the ACC for most of the past decade and a half. Going into this year, he had won at least a share of three of the last four ACC regular season titles. I think he's won nine ACC titles in his time at Carolina. He's been to nine Final Fours. He's won three national championships. He's been outrageously successful for more than 30 years. And that's why I think people thought going into the year, even with all the question marks, Roy Williams is going to figure out, because at the end of the day, he always figures it out. And I think that we just sort of expected him to kind of piece it together. And, you know, even in some down years over his time at Carolina, they still found ways to win 25 games and get to the NCAA tournament. So I think people thought he'd be able to do it again. And so that's why, again, this season is just so surprising to Carolina fans and from a national perspective.
In January, Roy Williams was hosting his weekly radio show and said, "This is the least gifted team I've ever coached." So, Jeff, did that affect his relationship with the team?
I mean, if you look at the public quotes coming out at that time from guys on the team, their reaction to it, Armando Bacot said they used it as motivation. Brandon Robinson, he kind of said it doesn't matter. He's not paying attention to it. And he almost wanted to prove that Roy Williams was wrong. And obviously they did not continue to win and make him forget those quotes. So I do think that's going to be, you know, one of the quotes that Roy Williams made publicly that people are going to remember about this season.
So my question about that comment, though, is Roy Williams says that without ever acknowledging his own part in recruiting the least gifted team he's ever coached. How much of that lays at his feet?
I think a lot of it does. So they're rebuilding last spring. They had to rebuild so heavily because they missed on so many guys in the 2019 recruiting class. Part of that was they didn't really lay a foundation over the past 6 or 7 years. And that just, it didn't allow them to kind of plan for the future. I mean, you know, Cam Johnson, they got a little bit lucky with as a 2-year grad transfer. Luke May developed a little bit more than they expected. But, you know, some of the big guys that they got over the last 5 years, Jaleek Felton, Seventh Woods, guys like that, they didn't pan out. Brandon Huffman, Sterling Manley, Andrew Playtech, guys on this year's team, you know, they've been told, you know, just relative non-factors at the college level. So a lot of it does fall on Roy Williams and his recruiting because, again, in the 2019 class, he swung at a lot of big names. He swung at, you know, Trey Mann, who ended up at Florida. Josh Green ended up at Arizona. Wendell Moore, he ended up at Duke. Jeremiah Robinson Earl is one of the best freshmen in the Big East. Zeke Nagy is one of the best freshmen out at Arizona. He missed on a lot of guys in the fall of the 2019 class that forced him to rebuild late. And that does fall on him, and it falls on the staff. You know, the roster is what it is.
There's no doubt that you now get a frustrated head coach with Roy Williams. He's not used to living through this type of season either. He has let his emotions out a couple of times this season.
Well, you got two choices. You can compete your butt off, or you can get up in the fetal position and curl up and start crying. I'm not going to freaking do that. We're going to excuse me. I apologize to everybody. We're going to freaking compete, and that's what we're going to do, and I apologize. I usually don't know. I don't know what I'm doing right now when I'm cursing.
What have you heard about how Roy has been dealing with this season behind closed doors?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that show that he hasn't lost his team despite the kind of the public proclamations. One is that Cole Anthony came back to play. When he got hurt, there was some talk of, you know, why is he going to come back? He could just go to the NBA. He'll be drafted in the lottery either way. He's not going to want to come back to the worst Carolina team in the Roy Williams era. But he came back. He constantly talked about how he was looking forward to coming back. So to me, that's a sign that, you know, when your most prized player wants to come back and help the team, that's a sign that you haven't totally lost the team yet.
Let's get to a glass half full perspective here to this, because there were some bright spots this season. What stands out to you as the brightest spot from the season for North Carolina?
I mean, Roy Williams, he did pass Dean Smith for the most wins in school history. That was a big moment for him personally, a big moment for the program. You know, I do think that they showed flashes of what they could have been if everything fell right. I think the way they started the season was positive. I think the way they ended the season was positive. If you take out December, January, and February, you know, the season is fairly bright aside from those 25 games. I think
that's a big aside from it, yeah.
Yeah, aside from that.
Jeff, let me be a beacon of light in a dark, dark world, right? We still have the ACC tournament, you know? There is still a shot out there that they could turn around, win the tournament, get the automatic bid. And in fact, Tar Heel players have said they think they can do it. They can win the whole ACC tournament, get the automatic bid. Give me some possibility. Like, give me the scenario in your mind where you think that actually happens.
I don't know if there is a situation where it actually happens, but I'll say this. So they competed with Duke for 45 minutes back in February. They competed against Virginia, you know, in mid-February, a Virginia team that's playing as well as any team in the league over the last month. They competed at Florida State. So I do think that, you know, with a healthy Cole Anthony, with a healthy kind of rest of the team, the role players starting to come around late in the season, it's still a tough team to play just because of how good Cole Anthony can be. If he puts up a 30.9 rebound, 6 assist night, which he's capable of doing and he's done this season, they can beat any team in the league. And, you know, I wouldn't put money on them winning the conference tournament, but they're still going to be a team that you don't really want to play with something important on the line.
Jeff, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate your insight.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Coming up, the best question that no one is asking about Dak Prescott's contract and why he deserves every penny.
We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Here's another story I want you to know. Nothing seems more polarizing to NFL fans than quarterbacks, especially when it comes to their contracts. The Dallas Morning News recently reported that the Cowboys have offered Dak Prescott a contract averaging $33 million per year and including $105 million in guaranteed money. This type of offer, as always, incites outrage from both fans and media members alike who believe he isn't worth the money because he hasn't won anything. Here's the problem with that argument. The NFL, more so than the NBA, is an absolute team game. For some reason, it was decided along the way that only quarterbacks would be held to the standard of only getting paid at the highest level if Super Bowls have been won. Why is that? According to OverTheCap.com, the highest cap value coming into last season for any wide receiver was the Chiefs' Sammy Watkins. The highest defensive lineman cap value was the Chargers' Melvin Ingram, and the Lions' Darius Slay had the highest value at the corner position. Ahead of last season, none of those players had won a Super Bowl, but no one insisted that that made them or their contracts worth less. Think of the huge contracts we've seen awarded to players like Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald over the past few years, contracts that were praised, not questioned, for two players that also don't have any Super Bowl rings. Winning the Super Bowl certainly adds value to anyone's resume and worth in contract negotiations. What we've all missed is that not winning championships doesn't actually decrease your value on the open market. Dak is worth whatever the market says someone will pay for his services. And the sooner fans start holding every single position to the same standards, the sooner people will realize the absurd double standard that one position is being held to without reason. I'm Jason Fitz, in for Mina Kimes. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.